You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
Hello, and welcome back to the Inside China podcast. My name is Mimi Lau.
And my name is Kinling Lo. We've had a short break for the past couple of weeks, but in this episode, we are going to pick up where we left off, looking at what comes next for the U.S. policy towards China now that the American people have spoken and Donald Trump has finally listened to who will be the next president of the United States. If you are a first-time listener to this podcast, you might want to go back and listen to our previous episode where we spoke to people who didn't get much attention in the analysis of voters in the U.S. election.
They were the Chinese-American voters who were part of a generational change, some say a revolution, in voting intentions that became part of historic turnout in the 2020 election. And how do I put this diplomatically? I think Chinese-American voters told Donald Trump, 你被炒鱿鱼了.
You're fired. Go.
But after 4 years of hostility, of tariffs and trade war, of sanctions and bans on Chinese tech companies, what comes next?
We are going to head to Washington to find out what we might expect and what we can already determine from who Joe Biden is picking to his cabinet. But before we do that, let's head to Beijing to listen to what people had to say about the new president-elect. It's only been a day or two since Chinese President Xi Jinping officially contacted Joe Biden and congratulated him for his election victory. But just after the election result, a colleague Tom Wang took to the streets to ask people what they thought of Joe Biden and what they thought about the men who spent the last 4 years in the White House.
Don't you mean the men who spent the last 4 years on Twitter in between games of golf?
Well, sure, that too. Here's what people on the streets of Beijing had to say to Tom.
I don't know much about Biden, and I don't know his attitude towards China, but I think it seems he won't be as tough on China as Trump has been.
I don't think Biden will treat China any better than Trump, because Biden will work with European countries to try and block China.
I think it's good for the world that Biden has won the presidency. I have faith that Biden will defuse the tense relationship between the U.S. and many countries, especially the relationship between China and the U.S.
I think Trump is a rogue. On the COVID-19 pandemic, he has tried to put all the blame on China's people or its government. And he doesn't want to take any responsibility. He's tried to stir up anger toward China around the world and cut the economic relationship between China and the U.S. He's tried to destroy China in this way.
America used to be the beacon for the world, but I think that's no longer the case. They have already moved to the opposite position. They take their own concerns too seriously and only care about the U.S. They don't care about the world and the developing countries. The new president should look at the big picture. He should start from the angle of a politician to maintain peace and the common good of the world, protect the United Nations and international trade.
But it wasn't all about Biden. Have a listen to this cab driver.
I think it would have been better for China if Trump was re-elected. On the surface, Trump has imposed many sanctions on China, but in fact, Biden would do the same to China. He won't be any better. I'm not worried about the U.S. vote recount. We don't vote for a U.S. president. But if I were able to, I would definitely vote for Trump. But if Trump heard what I just said, he would definitely be against me. He wouldn't like me, but I would still like him.
Now, before we head to Washington, D.C., have a listen to something that's happening online next week that's all about what we might expect for U.S. and China relations.
Starting on December the 1st, the South China Morning Post presents the second annual China Conference. This two-day online event will be live-streamed, bringing together business leaders, government officials, academics, and global thought leaders to discuss the unraveling U.S.-China relationship and how it might be repaired. You'll hear expert analysis on trade immigration, technology, and the impact of the U.S. and China on global governance. To register, search for SCMP China Conference 2020 or visit the URL chinaconference.us. Free passes are available for a limited time. Use the promo code PODCASTVIP. The second annual China Conference, presented by the South China Morning Post.
Now, a quick reminder that as we record this, we're seeing Donald Trump back on the big TV screens in our office, which is my cue to tell you the latest news from the US, from China, and around the world is constantly being reported and updated 24 hours a day at the South China Morning Post website, scmp.com. Now, let's head to Washington, D.C.
Rob Delaney is the Washington Bureau Chief for the South China Morning Post, and he has spent just about every waking minute of the past few months covering the U.S. election. Let's start with the latest news first. How important was it to have Chinese President Xi Jinping finally call up Joe Biden and congratulate him on his victory? How symbolic was that? And how important was that in Washington?
I think it's important because I think what's significant about the timing of it is that Xi Jinping did not come through with that recognition immediately at the same time that, for example, the UK and France and the EU had done. But it's also worth noting, I guess, that Xi Jinping didn't wait for Trump to concede, and he didn't wait for until we had a more official changing of the guard occurring. So there's a bit. So they're sort of somewhere in between, and I think it's very indicative of how Beijing operates, I would say, in that they were being very cautious about how they handled it. And I think that the timing of the message was done in a way that neither side could really claim that Beijing was taking a side in this.
Joe Biden has previously boasted that no American politician has had as much personal contact with Xi Jinping as he had while working as VP under Obama. But it is worth recapping how views in Washington towards China have changed in recent years.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think all the way throughout, if we want to go back to when China joined the WTO, which was that was 20 years ago. And for most of that time, up until, I would say probably up until the final years of the Obama administration, there wasn't too much. China just wasn't a top priority for lawmakers. It wasn't a top priority for the U.S. government, except, of course, for the U.S. Trade Representative. Because as we had seen in throughout successive administrations, there was always this effort to go through these very formalized dialogues to nudge China to open its markets a bit more, to provide more access, to give an easier time for foreign companies. Beijing did a great job, I think, of keeping the status quo intact until really you get to the point in the second half of Obama's tenure where you see Beijing's military start to build airstrips in the South China Sea. And that, I think, was a wake-up call for a lot of foreign policy analysts and think tanks. And I think that filtered up through the administration. But of course, then we were getting towards the end of the Obama administration, and the Trump administration came in like a thunderstorm on this issue on China. And I think the beginning of the Trump administration really coincided with this understanding that all of these formal dialogues and all of the ways that the U.S. government was trying to give China some leeway and give Beijing some face was really just allowing Beijing to bide its time. And I think this realization really sunk in as as Trump took office. Of course, we saw it ahead of time, even when Trump was campaigning. Before he won the election in 2016, we saw him use China as really holding China up as the reason that manufacturing jobs, so many jobs had left the U.S. And so basically, by the time Trump takes office, you've got a real hardline stance on within both parties about China. And that, of course, led to the trade war, which started in 2018 and is still going on. And so it'll be very interesting to see how this carries over into a new administration. No one is expecting Biden to go back to the days of the Obama administration in that either making concessions, waiting for dialogue to bear fruit. No one's expecting that. However, I think the expectation is that while the Biden administration will continue to apply pressure against China, there will be more of a coordinated effort. There will be more of a strategy, of a long-term strategy that's laid out, that is laid out in conjunction with Washington's allies to keep this pressure up.
In terms of American foreign policy, the biggest announcement from Joe Biden so far has been his choice of Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. He takes over the role from Mike Pompeo, who has been an extremely vocal critic of China and been the main driver of policies targeting China on many fronts. How might we compare and contrast Pompeo and Blinken?
Very different. Whereas Pompeo was or has been, we should not out of office yet. Pompeo was very much in the his approach to China was to really be relentless. So there was this constant portrayal as of Beijing as the reason that that the U.S. had lost its manufacturing jobs. The portrayal of Beijing as a menacing force that was really bent on world domination, and constant warnings to lawmakers in the U.S. and to local government officials to not talk to China. And that there were a number of measures, a string of measures about that started to restrict how Chinese diplomats in the U.S. could operate. And so we don't know how Antony Blinken is going to deal with China going forward. But I think given the fact that he has been very much of a multilateralist in the past, and he has been more of a traditionalist in terms of diplomacy, I don't think we're going to see that kind of relentless haranguing of anyone who wants to engage with China. I don't think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see Blinken trying to deal directly with China. I think you're going to see him try to open up very frank dialogue with China on fronts that are not just trade, on all fronts, so that his State Department can sort of get everything out on the table when it comes to China in a way that I think Pompeo chose to just pretty much dismiss China and talk to everyone but China. But I think Blinken will try and talk to China and everyone else.
Now, there's one significant quote from Blinken we can look to, where he says, quote, "We are in a competition with China. We need to rally our allies and partners instead of alienating them." The U.S. is already rallying allies like Australia, Japan, and the U.K. to send Navy ships to the South China Sea. How else might Antony Blinken and Joe Biden rally their international partners against China?
What I see is an incoming administration and incoming diplomacy led by Blinken that will not focus so much on the threat that China poses as he will focus on the need for these like-minded nations, these sort of developed democratic nations, to to work together to prove to the rest of the world that the model that they put forth is much more in the interest of the rest of the world than what China is trying to present as the answer for development going forward. So again, I think whereas you've got Pompeo's strategy was to really point out everything that China does and characterize it as a threat, whether they're legitimate, whether these characterizations are legitimate or not. You could argue about all of them up and down, whether it's the 5G network that Huawei is trying to build out, whether it's the Belt and Road Initiative. I don't think Blinken will discount any of these things, and it remains to be seen specifically what he wants to do in terms of the measures that were taken against Huawei and the current policies that the administration is pursuing against, like, for example, TikTok. We don't know, but I think instead of talking endlessly about how these are threats, the discussion and the arguments will bring more to the forefront the ideas that Washington and Washington's allies, whether it's Brussels, whether it's Canberra, whether it's Tokyo, the values and the direction that these countries have, and the way that they will benefit the rest of the world.
Apart from the trade war, the tech war, the Xinjiang and Hong Kong sanctions, and the overall anti-China sentiment that Trump promoted, what about the attacks and restrictions on Chinese people in the U.S., particularly the kind of rats under the beds paranoia about Chinese researchers and academics?
I think we're going to see a Biden administration continue to let the investigations underway at the Justice Department play out. There are literally dozens of investigations underway of Chinese, whether they're researchers, academics, and others who are working in research and development institutions in the U.S. I think we're going to see the DOJ or the Justice Department continue with these investigations, but I don't think we're going to see a continuation of this constant these flashing red lights about the threats and the dangers that Chinese researchers pose. I guess I would just say that it's in recent months, and I don't know whether this is just because so much attention has been focused on the election, or if it's something else. But I don't get a sense that this is so much of a concern anymore. I think that whole sort of reds under the beds kind of idea is just, I feel like it's ran its course here in the U.S. So I think you will probably see more convictions, but I think this is going to play out more on the back channels. I think it's going to play out between officials within the State Department and the Chinese embassy. And I don't think it's going to play out in public the way it has in the Trump administration.
We're not going to see any dramatic closures of embassies or consulates, I should say.
I don't think we will.
We have already seen Trump announce a brand new 200% tariff on one specific product made in China this week. Are there worries about Trump locking in particular policies or actions that the Biden administration can't walk away from or undo?
Yes, it's very possible. And given Trump's proclivities to sort of exact revenge and to make it difficult for anyone that he perceives to be an enemy, I think it's very likely that you're going to see probably a combination of executive orders. You're going to see rulemaking among the different agencies before Trump leaves. We're likely to see appointments that don't require Senate confirmation. There's also another practice that my colleague Marc Monnier wrote about very well in a piece that he did a couple of weeks ago, exactly on this subject, where he's talking about, we're also likely to see political appointments to civil servant jobs that are difficult to upend. And this is a practice known as burrowing in. And I think given Trump's MO, we would expect to see a lot of this burrowing in happening.
Only time will tell just how far the Trump influence can dig into the American government. That was Rob Delaney, our Washington bureau chief. You can, of course, keep up to date with all his analysis on scmp.com.
That's all we have for you this week. Thank you so much for staying tuned to Inside China podcast. If you're American, happy Thanksgiving. This is a tough time for everyone. Let's try to be grateful for this season to come. My name is Mimi Lau.
And I'm Kinling Lo.
I'll see you soon next time. Bye-bye. Bye.
For more podcasts from the South China Morning Post, head to scmp.com, where you can hear more about technology, trade, culture, and society.